Cleveland may soon represent many Americans from across the country in a showdown with Big Pharma over the opioid crisis. Ohio and West Virginia have been called ground zero for the crisis, and as many as 1,900 lawsuits filed by cities, counties, and Native American tribes have been bundled together to be heard in one federal courtroom here in Cleveland in October. Although last week the plaintiffs took a step forward toward a possible nationwide settlement, we get to that. But the plaintiffs say drug companies misrepresented the risks of opioid addiction and ignored warning signs of abuse, allowing the epidemic to grow.
More people in Cuyahoga County died from opioid overdoses in 2016 than homicides, suicides, and auto accidents combined. Beyond the emotional toll this is taking on our families, our friends, first responders, and counselors, there's also a huge burden on our taxpayers.
That's Armin Biudish, the Cuyahoga County executive in Cleveland, in 2017 announcing his county's lawsuit against drug companies. WCPN IdeaStream reporter Nick Castell is covering the story. Hi, Nick.
Hi, good to be here.
You join us in your studio. And let's start with the latest news. Attorneys for the local governments are asking Judge Dan Polster to approve what they call a negotiating class for a settlement. What does that mean?
So basically what the attorneys are asking is for the judge to allow them to create this system, this way for any county or city in the country to take part in negotiating settlements with the drug industry and then dividing up any settlement dollars that come through. Yeah. Itself, it is not a settlement, right, but it's sort of a way that they could all get together in one big group and work this out. The idea would be to divide settlement dollars among these localities based on things like the amount of opioids dispensed there, the number of overdose deaths, the number of addiction cases, a way to kind of quantify the damage of the opioid crisis in these places. Cuyahoga County, where we are now, is given as an example in the filing. Mm-hmm. And according to the attorneys, the county would receive $4.8 million for every $1 billion in hypothetical settlement money. Mm-hmm. Now, there is a hearing planned on this proposal before Judge Polster a week from today, and that's when we'll find out what he thinks of this idea.
Okay, that's June 25th. But, you know, you keep hearing – what I'm hearing is the word settlement, you know. So people might be saying, wow, this means that the trial, which is scheduled for October, may not go forward. What's your sense?
Well, and of course, everyone points to the tobacco settlement as being a possible example for the way this could go. But the reality is that the parties in this are still preparing for this trial. They've been collecting evidence, preparing experts. There are still motions being filed. There's a trial date, as we said, set for October. But at the exact same time, settlement negotiations have also been going on. Mm-hmm. I spoke with Andrew Paulus, who is a professor at Case Western Reserve University, and he says Judge Polster has pushed for a settlement from the start.
He views it as his responsibility to do what he can to obviate the opioid crisis through the legal system. And he tried very hard early on to try to get the parties together. And when that was unsuccessful, he seems to have concluded that setting a trial date was probably the only way that you might actually get some movement on settlement.
Now, outside of this federal case, there have been some claims settled. Purdue Pharma recently agreed to settle with the Attorney General of Oklahoma in the state courts there. But again, that is not directly connected to this federal lawsuit. And there is one other wrinkle that could change the course of these cases, and that is bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. One drug industry defendant, Insys, recently filed for bankruptcy after executives were found guilty in a criminal case. Reuters reported a few months ago that Purdue is considering the possibility of bankruptcy, and that could put this litigation on hold, too, unless there's permission from the bankruptcy courts to go forward.
Yeah. Look, let's back up here. What are all of these local governments accusing these drug companies of doing? I mean, we have a vague sense, but what specifically?
Right. And these are very long filings with a lot of claims in them. But basically, the local governments are accusing manufacturers of deliberately deceptive marketing of opioids by basically not being transparent about the risks of addiction, which led to the expanded use of opioids. They're also accusing drug distributors of failing to maintain effective controls against what's called diversion, which is basically the misuse of pain pills. Mm-hmm. And they're accusing distributors of not effectively halting suspicious orders. So what they're really saying overall is that they think that defendants sold and distributed far more pills than they knew could have been used for legitimate purposes.
Yeah. And of course, we know the human toll. I mean, the stories are just devastating. But talk about other harm that local governments are saying they suffer because of this.
Well, the local governments are saying that this opioid crisis has led to additional costs in social services, cost to the criminal justice systems, increased spending on addiction treatment. As one example, in Cuyahoga County's lawsuit, the attorneys say that the cost of treatment beds in the county doubled between 2014 and 2017 from about $5 million to $10 million. Mm-hmm. Statewide, we know there's been a big increase in the number of children in foster care. In Ohio, 26%. There was a 26% increase in the number of kids in foster care since 2013. The opioid crisis is seen as a major reason for that. Professor Paulus from Case Western Reserve University says this case is sort of different from other civil cases because the damage isn't like one specific harm. It's really a wide-reaching public health crisis.
But for them to then go after the opioid industry to pay for it, it makes logical sense. They caused it. Why shouldn't they have to pay for it? But it's not the kind of typical damage award process that our legal system was ever designed to handle.
And all while this opioid crisis has been going on, overdose deaths have steadily risen in Cuyahoga County. And in recent years, they've even spiked higher than they were before. From 2015 to 2017, the number of deaths nearly doubled from 370 to 727. And that's seen as being driven by overdoses on fentanyl. Now, the overdose rate has fallen somewhat, but it still remains high. And this really shows how the crisis has morphed over the last several years. Last year, I spoke with Lisa Roberts, who's a public health nurse with the city of Portsmouth in southern Ohio. She says even though prescribing practices have tightened, the opioid crisis itself hasn't stopped.
As the prescription opioids, you know, were regulated and controlled and went away for many people that, for, you know, weren't getting them legitimately, heroin just flooded Ohio, just flooded. We actually watched that happen over the course of a very short period of time.
And that's what local governments are also pointing out in this suit. They're saying the crisis began with these pills, but since then it has morphed into harder drugs like heroin and fentanyl.
Well, and you mentioned INSYS. It seems there's some precedent here because we know executives have already been found guilty. That was the jury trial in Boston. The founder and executives from INSYS Therapeutics were found guilty of racketeering and other crimes. Prosecutors said they bribed doctors into unnecessarily prescribing painkillers, fueling the epidemic. I mean, they already won in that jury trial. So how have drug companies been responding to these thousands of lawsuits, or hundreds at least of lawsuits here?
Well, we'll see how they lay out their arguments in court. Right now, what they've said is that they deny these allegations. And they also point to, government regulation. Drug companies and their defenders have said responsibility should also lay with doctors who wrote prescriptions for opioids, as well as, they've pointed to the FDA and the Drug Enforcement Administration, saying the federal government was right here watching this whole time.
Yeah. Look, if this case does go to trial, what evidence do you expect there to be? I mean, you could parade families. I mean, it would be devastating. But what evidence would the plaintiffs have?
Well, one powerful piece of evidence in this case is a confidential government database of drug sales called ARCOS. It stands for Automation of Reports and Consolidated Orders System. It's maintained by the DEA, and it shows which companies sold opioids, how many they sold, where those pills went. Judge Polster, early on in this process, ordered the government to turn this data over to the parties. But one catch in all this is that it's under a protective order right now, barring it from being disclosed to the public. So the rest of us don't really know what's in the data.
Look, we only have about a minute here, but what else should we know here?
Well, local governments have been trying all that they can to provide naloxone, which is the overdose reversal drug, to as many people as they can. As one example, the city of Greene in the Akron area is putting naloxone in hotels.
Hotels.
Yeah, hotels. And so they're just trying to find any way that they can get this to people. I spoke with Scott Osicki, who is the head of the Alcohol, Drug Addiction, and Mental Health Services Board, and he said they're trying to get fentanyl test strips to people as well. So they're trying anything that they can to get resources into people's hands.
Amazing. Nick Castell of WCPN IdeaStream, ahead of a scheduled trial this fall, over 1,900 lawsuits against big pharma opioid manufacturers. Nick, thank you so much.
Thank you.